You're listening to a podcast on the Audio Boom Network. This is Walk the Talk with me, Dave Thomas. Thank you for downloading this edition of the programme. I do hope you enjoy it. In these podcasts, I will be talking with people who share their stories of tragedy and hope. I will be exploring mental health and well-being with workplace professionals and also with folk who have struggled to make sense of their own lives. My hope is that these shared experiences will remove the loneliness from those people who are convinced it is their fate to suffer alone. I'm Dave Thomas, and I've been a serving police officer for over 20 years. You're very welcome to join me on Walk the Talk. Tom Wheelhouse spent several years in the Metropolitan Police Service, and one of his career highlights was working on the 2012 London Olympics. However, he soon came to realise that his dream job was becoming a nightmare, and after careful thought, handed in his resignation due to the toxic work atmosphere he found himself in. With no job and no plan, he managed to find work in the commercial sector for several years before realising what he really wanted to do was to help people who found themselves in the same situation he was in years earlier. He set up his own company, Mightify, who assist police officers who have left the service after retirement or through resignation. Tom reminds us that there is a life worth living after leaving the police and gives tips on how not to sell ourselves short when going for work. We also talk about the potential pitfalls surrounding mental health and the loss of identity when people leave. So join us now as I talk to him at his home in Horsham, Surrey. Tom, welcome to Walk the Talk. Could you tell everyone a bit about yourself, your police career, and how you came to set up your own company?
Yeah, of course. So I joined the Met Police at about 23. I was only there 5 years, so a lot shorter than probably most of the people listening. Always loved the job. Saw myself doing what would have been 35 years, progressing, doing specialisms, all the rest of it. And I was quite lucky to have some really good opportunities while I was there. So I worked on the Olympics, mostly uniform stuff as well, and was on the TSG for a while doing public order and all that kind of thing. Why did I leave? I got to a stage where I realised that actually it was a toxic environment that wasn't doing me as a person any good. I certainly felt there were no real career options there for me or progression options there for me, and I just realised that on a day-to-day basis it was making me fairly unwell, both mentally and physically. And I got to a point where I felt like I didn't really have any other options other to stick or twist and to leave entirely. And in a way, I was bizarrely quite lucky that it was as bad as it was where I was, because when I and various others tried to say, this isn't really working for us, the response was, if you don't like it, go and work in Tesco, which obviously wasn't very motivational. Basically, that night or that morning, I drove home, typed up my resignation, and came in the next day and resigned, left without a plan. But the penny had dropped for me that whatever I did next, and I didn't know what that was going to be, it wouldn't be, or it couldn't be worse. So I then was faced with, yeah, I was 30-ish. So I was at a bit of a kind of crossroads in my life as well. I had no job, had no plan, didn't know what I could do, didn't know what I wanted to do really. Had to sort out my own stuff personally as well. So I went and sought some counselling on a personal level, which was the first time I really understood that actually I might have been traumatised, even though I didn't really realise that at the time, because I'd come from that just get on with it and man up culture. So I sorted that side of it out and still continue to. And on the practical side, I had to teach myself really, what do I want to do? What can I do? What's out there? So through a lot of trial and error, drawing on my own sort of personal networks and just asking a lot of people and being told no a lot, I found my way into the private sector for a couple of years, which was great. And that opened my eyes that actually all the people that I worked with there didn't have three heads and an MBA from Harvard. They were just people as well, just like the people that I'd worked with in the job. And it made me realise that actually so many people that I knew who by this point were still telling me, well, so you mean you can just leave and actually it'll be okay? They were also capable of so much more than they realised. So I worked there for a couple of years and it was fantastic. I was invested in, I was looked after, but it became quite about the commercials, and that's not really me. So I decided that I would do my own thing, because I was fed up of seeing a total lack of support for people like me, or people who were leaving the emergency services in any way. And basically I refused to stand back and watch it continue when I knew that actually I could do something about it. So that's fundamentally why I started Mitify, is to be the support network, resettlement network that pretty much every other industry you could name has and is totally normal, whereas in the police, it's still seen as some kind of bizarre sorcery.
You mentioned the toxic atmosphere. What are some of the reasons you think people leave the police?
I think, well, traditionally, I think there's, you know, people always got to the 30 years, or more or less, they got to the 30 years, and that was the way it was, and you had your pension at the end, and that was your return on investment, if you like, of your 30 years. I think in the wider society, that's not the model anymore. People generally now don't join any profession expecting to do it for 30 years or 35 years. So people entering the job increasingly aren't thinking in those terms. I think the job has, and I'm generalising, but I think the job has pushed a lot of people out. So there's a push element to it, which is, sorry, we can't accommodate flexible working. Sorry, if you're injured, we can't find something that thinks about what you can do, or we're interested in what you can't. Traditionally, those support networks for well-being, mental, physical health aren't there, so people are left to fend for themselves, which pushes them away. I think traditionally there's a feeling that selection processes or promotion processes weren't as fair or level a playing field as they could have been, so people who seek progression or ambition in that sense are pushed away. I think there's traditionally a feeling in the police that ambition is a dirty word, so people who are ambitious for the right reasons feel that that's not part of the culture. And on the flip side, there's a lot of pull factors that people realized, and I guess train driving's the obvious one in recent years, that people realize actually there's another industry out there that's going to pay me quite well and treat me well, and actually why not? And it's not just we'll come to this later, I'm sure, but it's not, you don't have to be a train driver. There's plenty of industries out there now that want transferable skills and want people and open their eyes to that and can go to the police or police officers and say, look, actually, we quite fancy you working for us. How would you like to have evenings and weekends off? And a lot of those things that the police can't really compete with at the moment. So people are both pushed away, but also pulled by other factors. And people's lives change. You know, you might join at 21 or 18 and think, actually, I don't care if I'm working 100 hours a week and going away and all the rest of it. When you've got two young kids, that doesn't quite ring true so much. So people's priorities change.
Well, that's very nicely brought me onto the next question, in that now there are so many police officers leaving the service and they wonder what skills they might be able to offer potential new employers. Perhaps we could look at some of those skills, and in particular how it makes them a valuable and attractive resource.
Absolutely. And I think there's a couple of ways to look at this. Everybody is different. So for somebody like me, I'll always say it depends. But there are some themes to police skill sets that are always going to be valuable elsewhere. And the most obvious one is communication. You can't get past day two of being a police officer if you don't know how to talk to people, or you can't learn that pretty quickly. Pretty much every other job I think that we've ever placed people into or worked with needs you to be able to talk to people, whether it's sales. And sales is just people skills. People buy from people. So if you can negotiate, influence, communicate, you can sell things, whether you want to or not. Project management is about communication, because something will go wrong. And when it goes wrong, can you solve that problem? Can you connect a supplier and a client? Of course you can, because you've been negotiating all your life, all your career. Getting things done sounds really simple and obvious. But one thing I did find when I moved to the private sector, and again, I'm generalizing, that actually if a meeting started at 9, people thought it was hilarious that I'd be there at 8:45 with my pen out, ready to go. But that was the culture I'd come from, and I didn't want to be fined or bring in the cakes next week. So just doing what you say you're going to do is a skill that and not going home until the job's finished. There aren't many other environments out there, or working environments out there, where you say to your partner in the morning, well, in theory, I finish at 4, but I'll be home when I'm home. And that's accepted. I'm not saying you have to always behave that way, but that I won't go home until the job's done and I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do are fundamental things that are in short supply out there. But really, the main point is to look at actually what makes you you. And the police sometimes can be very good at squeezing you into a mold of making you like everybody else. You wear the same uniform as everybody else. You know, you look the same as everybody else. And there's a lot of good reasons for that. In a public order situation, you know, somebody has to be in charge. Of course they do. But in day-to-day life, when you start just accepting that I'm a police officer like everybody else, well, you're not. You know, even if you're also a safeguarding DC like everybody else on your team, you're all different people. So really what matters increasingly in the outside world is being able to understand your personal value and your personal skills and actually explain why they're different. Because if you go around saying to people, I'm a police officer, I'm sorry, but most people won't understand that or value it. Whereas if you go and say to them, actually, what I do is I solve complex problems, I'm a great communicator, and why that's valuable in logistics is X, Y, Z. That's the key. So everybody has an individuality, which I think is often overlooked or somehow suppressed in policing because there's too much of a reliance on command and control traditionally, and not enough acceptance of everybody's individual skill set and everybody's individual ability to make their own decisions. And one of the first things I think I ever learned in the police was nobody can tell you to arrest somebody. Yeah. That's your power, it's your decision. But we seem to have kind of gone to a point where actually we'll let you take somebody's liberty away or potentially injure somebody, but we won't let you decide when to eat, what to eat, what to wear today, what decisions to make, how you're going to solve that problem. Whereas the rest of the world will give you that power and give you that autonomy and say, okay, we're going to pay you X amount per year. We want you to do this job. Off you go. Every police officer has the ability to do that because you do it all the time. But when it comes to thinking about themselves, they're generally quite poor at actually expressing that.
Do you find that officers underestimate their own experiences and skills?
99 times out of 100, absolutely. I think because of that same thing of how you start to... It's almost a mindset shift that we've run lots of events before, and we ran an event in London last year where I deliberately brought along somebody who was a career coach with no police understanding or background. And one of the people who came to that course said to this coach, in response to the classic question, what do? They said, well, I'm a DS on MIT Team 7 at ESB on OP, whatever.
What?
Exactly. And, you know, and you and I might know what that means. Yeah. But this person said, sorry, I don't have a clue what you're talking about. And they talked it through for 5-10 minutes. And in the end, the coach said to her, so you solve murders? And even then, she said, well, you know, obviously not every time. Sometimes we do because it's complicated and it's difficult. And because there's that also, people don't join jobs like the police to blow their own trumpet. They're generally people who are very altruistic and selfless and they don't want to be the center of attention. But unfortunately, in a job process, in a selection process, you have to be saying, well, here's what I can do. So, and imagine, and how about that as a starting conversation? I solve murders. I struggle to think of anyone who's not going to say to you, wow, please tell me more. Whereas if you say, I'm a detective sergeant with 18 years service, they might say, well, I don't really know what that means. And so what? And I'm not trying to play that down. I think it's amazing, obviously, because I understand what it means, but most people don't. Like I said, it's just not a culture traditionally where people go around. You wouldn't walk into a police canteen, if there are any left, and say, look how great I am, because you wouldn't, you know, that's not the culture. Yeah. But in the rest of the world, or certainly when you're applying for another job, that's exactly what, you know, you have to sell yourself. So people have to break away from that mindset of talking down what they've done, which might be great to be, you know, humble and modest, and actually realize that you're doing things every day that other people can't even dream of or imagine doing. So it's absolutely fine to step into that and say, hang on, I'm good at this stuff.
I did a podcast a few months ago, and on the view that media have of police officers, and the detectives always, you know, likes of Frost or other people, where the complicated people, the damaged people, they've had a divorce, they've split up from the partners. It's always a negative view of a police detective, isn't it? And I'm just wondering whether that is a problem with when you go back into Civvy Street, whether you know, civilian employers have that same sort of preconception, I suppose.
I think that's a good point. And I think if you say, I'm a police officer, and let that hang there as your statement of what you do, you open yourself up to that preconception, because whoever reads that is going to make their own decision. And if they, like exactly like you said, if all they know about the police is they watched A Touch of Frost, then is that really the, you know, that might, maybe that is the angle you want them to give, but I would say probably not. You have to be the one who can say, here's what I can do, rather than just hanging that out there and saying, well, I've been in the police for 30 years and expecting that somebody will understand that and translate it for you. There might be somebody who understands that, who gets it, of course, but actually most people won't, and they really don't understand what it takes. And even in what we do, obviously I was in the Met, but we go to different forces all over the country, and even acronyms change from one force to the next. So don't expect, even within policing, that somebody understands what you're talking about just by saying it in your language. But you're absolutely right, there is a preconception out there which is not always going to be the best one, so avoid that by saying what you actually do and being proactive on that.
Well-being and mental health issues are hot topics within the police service at the moment, and thankfully serving officers continue to enjoy improvements and support in that arena. But for officers leaving the service, there's very little provision, I guess. People listening may be wondering, why is it needed? Could we perhaps discuss the potential issues that officers leaving the force may face?
You're absolutely right, and I'd agree that it's great that there's so much happening at the moment for people who are serving. Traditionally, my view of what's happened for people leaving is that you only got access to anything if you'd done your 30 years, which increasingly most people aren't going to do in the future. And if you did get that, in a lot of places, it was either thanks, bye, and that's the end of it, or maybe you get half a day on where to invest your pension, and that's just not good enough. If we look at it from the human side of that, somebody's just given probably 30, or whether it's 10, 20, 30, it doesn't matter how many years of their life to the local community one way or another. And all that organisation can say to them is, thanks, bye, and here's half a day on where to invest your lump sum. That's a disgrace, in my opinion. So there's a human, basic human decency element to that. And I know that we live in an environment or in a world where things have to have a return on investment and have to pay their way. The other way to look at that is we're also in an environment now where we're trying to find 20 or 40,000 new police officers. Where do new police officers come from? They come from communities where other people have been police officers normally. Friends and family, aunts and uncles. Are any of those people at the moment going to advocate a police career to their niece or nephew? They might, but not really. So there's a bit of lateral thinking as well for organisations saying, if we actually support people to leave as advocates and leave with a positive impression, maybe they'll stay advocates of the police rather than going on Facebook groups and saying to people, well, don't bother joining because it's, you know, TJF or whatever. And also, it makes sense as a return on investment to, not just when people have got 6 months left, but before that, to invest in them and say, how can we help you? What happens next? How can we help you with that? Because what if some of those people might come back and be trainers or mentors, or they might stay on in some areas where they're doing a 30-plus scheme? And I think that model is over, where it was okay to just say to people after 30 years, okay, thanks, bye. That's not what people need. And the well-being elements of it, as you mentioned, you don't hand in your trauma when you hand in your warrant card.
No.
You don't package it all up and stick it in the back of your warrant card and leave it in, you know, the store's office on your way out. That trauma came from being a police officer most of the time. So why is it not the police's responsibility anymore to care for that person one way or another, or at least to equip them with the tools to manage that? Being in the police for however long becomes your identity for all the reasons we mentioned. You know, it's how you dress, it's what, where you eat, it's where you go, it's your life. Suddenly someone takes away that identity, and now you wake up on the Monday morning and you haven't got anywhere to be, and all the things you knew, all the structures that gave you your life, don't exist anymore, really. And you're not part of it. And the police moves on quickly. You know, I know that. Suddenly you're not part of the group anymore. You're not one of them anymore. And that leads people to, you know, very high-risk behaviours. It leads people into some bad places. And even where it ties into, as you said, the ongoing support that people are getting while they're serving, is that being in a position where you have no options, or you perceive that you have no options, is a dangerous place to be. And I know that's where I was, you know, and I was nowhere near the end of my service in the old-fashioned terms. But I felt like, actually, I'm at a point here where I can't stay in policing because it's breaking me, but I don't know what else there is. Mm. And I don't know where I can go. And that's a really, really dangerous place to be, well-being-wise. So what I'm saying is that it's not just about what happens while you're serving versus what happens when you've got 6 months left to retirement. The two things are completely interlinked and should be all the way through a career. Because if you can proactively say to people, do you know what happens next? Where do you want to be next? How can we help you with what happens next? Then people always have options, and you'll find that people become more engaged. Maybe they stay longer, and there's your return on investment if you want to look at it as an accountant. You know, people stay longer. If one person stays rather than leaving after 25 years, that pays the cost of recruiting several more people easily. Mm-hmm. We're in a position where now a lot of forces, they won't be able to recruit as many people as they ideally need to. The pipeline isn't there anymore. So we can't stick behind that old view of, well, if you don't like it, that's okay. There's plenty of people queuing up to take your job. Well, there aren't anymore. And that, you know, that's wrong in so many ways anyway. But
and if there are, they're probably not going to stay that long.
No, exactly. So, it comes back to that almost cheesy thing that the Richard Branson stuff about, you know, training people and treating them well enough that they can leave, but treating them so well that they don't. Mm. And the police at the moment seems to be, and not everywhere, I'm generalising, but seems to be in the worst case scenario, where it's giving people a lot of skills, but not giving them the treatment to actually want to stay with those skills. And all that's going to happen is, increasingly, what's happening already, private sector employers, external employers, aren't stupid. They'll realise all those skills are there, and they'll think, hang on a minute, here's 120,000 people who are really good and also really fed up. Why don't we have a few of those? And they'll make an environment that people want to go to, because that's business. So I think there's an element of vulnerability or humility required in a few quarters to say, actually, we've got great people, and one day they might want to leave. But actually, if we treat them a bit better, maybe they'll stay. Because let's face it, most people don't join the police to make a fortune or to be, you know, have their name in lights. Mm. So you've already got the right kind of people, and they're there for the right reasons. Just treat them better and, you know, equip them for what happens next. Sit down with them and say, where do you want to be in the next 5, 10, 20 years in your career? How can we help you do that? If you're injured, oh yeah, you can go to Flint House or Harrogate or Auchterarder, but you'll have to pay for it yourself. You know, a professional sports club would never say to their players, have you been paying into the physio? Because otherwise we won't come on at half time and, you know, stretch you off. It just wouldn't happen. It's crazy. So actually, it's about planning ahead and equipping people with not just the tools to manage their well-being in the strict sense of that word, mentally, physically, but actually to manage their personal development as well as their life changes.
And going back to identity, you've actually hit the nail on the head with the loss of identity and adding to day-to-day living as well. Perhaps somebody's going through a divorce or the kids have left home, and it's quite easy to see where, you mentioned that those dark places where it could very definitely channel somebody towards the thoughts of suicide, I suppose.
100%. And I think, you know, we traditionally, and what I think is quite terrifying, is that people don't, or a lot of forces don't know where those people get to, or whether, you know, people who've retired. And it's all well and good saying, okay, at the end of the 30 years, you get this pension. But it's not so great if for whatever reason, that only lasts you one more year after that point. And I think we still don't really understand the depth of that problem of people who, whether they left after 30 or whether they were ill health retired or left early, and then what happened to them after that. And I think very few police forces could answer that question at the moment, which is kind of terrifying. But to me, that, you know, that's still a duty of care. Before we even get into the why should they do it on a financial and organisational level, it's a fundamental duty of care to those people. Compare that with, I know it's not perfect, compare that with the military, where there's just a whole network of resettlement, support, charities, all that stuff, community aspects, and it's night and day.
Well, you specialise in assisting officers to find new employment, and I suppose in many ways a new way of life, so perhaps we could go through some of the things that you can offer.
Yeah, of course. I think overall what we try to do is build a system that helps people answer the question, what happens next? So to me, it doesn't matter whether you do 5 years, you do 35 years, you're injured, you're ill health retired, or you're just thinking about your options. You should have access to top quality, impartial expert advice and support. So that's what we do, because I'm so fed up with hearing that, you know, if you're in the military, and again, I know it's not perfect, but you have access to funding, you have access to careers advice, you have access to all these insight days and placements with companies. If you're a professional rugby player, you get that stuff. If you're a professional cyclist, you get that stuff. So why don't the police? And I'm yet to find a good answer to that question. So I decided to build it myself. So that's what we do. So how that looks practically is we can do all the practical career change things. And I'm a career coach by trade, I guess. So that's whether that's writing a CV, whether that's writing a LinkedIn profile, whether that's a job interview prep, whether that's connecting you up with specific employers that we partner with or specific training providers that we partner with. But equally, I understand that there's a whole piece before that where we actually say to people, well, tell us about yourself. What do you want to do? Which I think never happens in a police career. Even if you go through promotion processes, selection processes, no one ever says to you, well, tell us about yourself. And that's the first question you're going to be asked in the outside world. So we run free events around the country where you can just come along and hear us talk on those topics. We run a proper 2-day CPD accredited resettlement course, which increasingly we're talking to forces and federations about running directly, but also you can come to as an individual. And again, that's to say, look, half a day on who to invest your pension with is not good enough. We need to sit down with you and actually say, where are you at? What are your circumstances? What do you need? So we can help people from that initial position of I'm leaving or I'm thinking about leaving for any reason through to I'm now in a new environment. And we have lots of feedback where people have said, I've got my life back. And that's ultimately where I want to get people to, because I needed that support 5 years ago and it wasn't there.
So in the next couple of years, there's going to be a huge number of police officers retiring. So what can they do to help themselves, and what advice would you offer them now?
Yeah, great question. And like I said, we know, as you say, that there are a lot of people who joined the job in 1990, 91, so on. So there is a big wave of people who are approaching that point. It's never too early to prepare. That's my first piece of advice. There's probably no point actually applying for jobs until you're nearer the end, but it's never too early to start thinking about what happens next. And my second piece of crucial advice on that is see it as a positive opportunity to do something you want to do. The one thing I could say about all the hundreds or probably thousands now of people we've worked with, the ones who make it successfully are the ones who let go of any kind of negative, what this is about is an escape from something negative. The mindset has to be, one chapter is ending, and whether it was good or bad or mixed, it's ending. And you have to make peace with that and say, okay, but what has it given me that I can use moving forward? What do I want to do next? Every conversation we have, we say to somebody, okay, what do you want to do next? And they generally say, oh, I don't know, I haven't thought about that bit. I just want to leave the job, or I'm coming to the end. Well, that's not really much use. I'm sorry, that sounds harsh, but that's not really much use. What do you want? Never mind just what jobs you want to do next. What do you want your life to look like as a result of retiring or as a result of leaving the police? And once you start to answer that question, all the practical things can happen next. Even if you get a piece of A4 paper and you sit down with your partner or your family or your friends in the pub and you write down, what do I want next? Where in the country or in the world? How much money do I need to make that happen? How far do I want to commute? Do I even want to work full time? All those things. Only then can you start to put together a plan. And you need a plan. And that's, again, like we said earlier, one thing police officers are good at, planning. So plan for it. Involve the people around you, because it's going to have an impact on your friends, family, around you, because their life's going to change as well if you're retiring from something that's taken over your identity. So involve the people around you, work out what you want from it, and plan for it as a positive opportunity to do something you actually want to do. And the last bit of that is don't be afraid to ask for help, whether it's from me or not. Find out from other people around you who've been through career changes or who've been through retirement. What are they doing? How did they find it? Draw on that network. And I think you mentioned some of the great stuff that's happening in policing at the moment. And so much of it to me comes back to that peer support element. And that there's no difference in career transition or retirement. Use your peers, use them, lean on them. That's what we're here for. That's one thing we do all have, is that bond. So draw on other people's experiences.
we're not great advocates of change as human beings, are we? In general, and 30 years into police service, perhaps we do come a little bit institutionalised, and that is the bottom line, isn't it? It is change, and it can be difficult for people.
100%, yeah, and yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go down that route of police organisations and their general approach to change, but I think if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got, and I don't know who said that originally, but it's going to be different, so embrace that. Yeah, one thing we always say to our clients is that if I was running one of my events and there's a group of people there who are in the police and we're in a bar and something happened in the street outside, I know full well that all those people would sprint outside and they'd deal with it. Mm. Whatever happened, they'd deal with it without a second thought because they're adaptable and flexible and resilient and all those great things. If I said to them, okay, come outside with me, I'm going to introduce you to the CEO of Amazon, they'd probably all crumble because they'd have to talk about themselves. And I've been there and done that, and I've felt that as well. So you have to embrace that it's going to be different. But actually, you've been managing different and dangerous things all your life. You can do that. You just, in the same way that there was a day when you didn't know the ins and outs of the Fraud Act, now you're at a day where you don't know the ins and outs of career change. So, you know, be open to learning that. Ask for advice, ask for help, because that's what we're trying to provide you. And embrace that change, because actually it's going to lead you to that position of whatever it is that you want next. More, you know, traveling the world, more time at home, doing the school run every day, whatever your ambitions are, it doesn't matter. Embrace that as a positive change. And you're absolutely right. Change is not something that naturally comes easy to people, and it's uncomfortable, but you have to get comfortable with it.
All right. Well, we're going to put the details of your company on the program notes, but if people want to look you up on the internet, where can they find you?
Easiest one, connect with me, Tom Wheelhouse, on LinkedIn, or just search Mitify and find the website, or we're on every social media as well, and all the links will be there.
Okay, well, you're doing good work. It's Tom Wheelhouse. Thank you very much indeed.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.